I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Earlier this year, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett signed a law requiring voters to show approved photo identification at the polls. Civil liberties, civil rights, and voting rights groups sued, saying the law disenfranchised voters. They asked Commonwealth Court Judge Robert Simpson to issue an injunction. Yesterday, the judge said no, refusing to block the law. He said Act 18 is, quote, a reasonable, non-discriminatory, non-severe burden when viewed in the broader context of the widespread use of photo ID in daily life. This has been a closely watched case in a state that could be in play this election year, and it's our topic for today's Radio Times. We begin with Richard Hassan. He's a professor of law and political science at the University of California at Irvine, author of The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. He also blogs at electionlawblog.org. And Rick Hassan, nice to have you with us. Radio Times.
Good morning.
What's the significance of this judge's ruling?
Well, I think it's quite significant. Pennsylvania is the only state of the battleground states where the question about whether or not voter ID is going to be in place in November is an open question, and this opinion makes it much more likely that voter ID will actually be used this November in Pennsylvania.
What the judge said, and I have part of his decision all over my table here, but he's saying that this new law does not place a particularly severe restriction on those who might not have the proper ID. Can you flesh that out for us?
Well, he said two things, I think, that are related to that point. The first thing he said was that he didn't believe the plaintiff's claims that up to 9% of Pennsylvania voters would lack ID by Election Day. He thought the figure was probably closer to 1%. And he believed that the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation and other officials will be able to get IDs into the hands of people who want them in order to be able to vote. The second thing he said was that for those people for whom getting the ID would be a significant burden, the appropriate remedy is not to call the whole ID plan off, but instead to create special exemptions for those people, and suggested perhaps either through the use of absentee ballots or even a further follow-on lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the law just as to these this class of people, that would be the appropriate way to deal with it rather than throwing the law out wholesale.
Interestingly, the state did not represent any evidence of actual voter fraud or incidents of in-person voter fraud in the state of Pennsylvania, but that seemed to be an issue that didn't influence the judge one way or the other.
Well, on this point, remember, the state of Pennsylvania conceded there were no instances of impersonation voter fraud, which is the kind of fraud that a voter ID law would prevent. And we know nationally this is extremely rare. In preparing my book, I couldn't find a single election over the last generation where it was even conceivable that impersonation voter fraud could have swayed the outcome of the election, as opposed to absentee ballot fraud, which occurs, although not regularly enough, that we do find elections that get thrown out because of absentee ballot fraud. But the judge, following the lead of the United States Supreme Court in a 2008 case following the checking the constitutionality of Indiana's law, said you don't need that kind of proof. It's enough that the state would be wanting to use sound election principles and trying to preserve voter confidence in the integrity of the electoral process. So this would be a sufficient reason. And he added, even though it seems that some of the Republican legislators who voted for this bill may have done so for partisan reasons to depress Democratic turnout.
In fact, that's a reference to Mike Terzai saying at an event that this law would allow Mitt Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania.
That's right. Now, I believe Terzai has explained this will allow Romney to win because it will take the fraud out of the election, but of course others have read the claim differently as helping to depress Democratic turnout in a state where the people who lack ID are more likely to vote Democrat.
Let me quote something else from the ruling. The judge said the state legislature was not required to prove that significant in-person voter fraud existed before it could permissibly act to prevent it, basically saying that the legislature was within its purview to pass this law.
That's right. He gave a lot of deference both to the state legislature and its ability to pass the law, as well as to state officials. And this, I thought, was perhaps the most controversial part of the opinion. What he did on the earlier part of the opinion in terms of deferring to the legislature is in line with what the United States Supreme Court said in the Indiana case. But it seemed to me, as an outside observer, just reading secondhand reports of the trial, that there's a serious question as to whether or not Pennsylvania can get its act together and get the IDs into the hands of, I believe the state estimated that there were 750,000 people who lacked their right ID, who were registered voters, and up to another 500,000 who would have expiring IDs. So it seems like a mammoth task. Here we are about 3 months before the election to get IDs into everyone's hands. But the judge had confidence that the state was going to be able to do this.
And just to underscore that, he had faith in the political process, that it would protect voters' rights, believing that the state would be able to address the hundreds of thousands of people that don't appear to have the proper identification.
Yes, and I think that everyone's going to be watching now as Democrats and others move from litigation to mobilization to try and register as many people as possible and get their IDs in order to be able to vote.
The judge referenced the Supreme Court, the Crawford case, a number of times in his ruling. How significant is that?
Well, what's important to point out here is that the Crawford case, discussing the constitutionality of Indiana's voter identification law, was a case decided under the United States Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. It was not, strictly speaking, binding upon the judge because the judge was asked to strike down the law under the Pennsylvania state constitution protections of the right to vote. In Missouri and in Wisconsin, we've had two states where judges have stricken their state's voter ID laws, in Wisconsin at least temporarily. In Missouri, it went to the state Supreme Court on state constitutional grounds. Mm. And so the judge didn't need to follow the Crawford case, but he found it to be persuasive authority, relied on it, and used the same reasoning. And that's something that some courts, but not all courts, have done when they've addressed these state constitutional law challenges to voter ID.
Help us understand, because the judge also said that if he had applied the quote-unquote strict scrutiny to this case, he might have decided differently. What is he saying there?
Yeah, well, that's a little bit of technical legal jargon.
Go ahead.
So generally speaking, when there's a constitutional claim, the first thing the judge needs to decide is whether or not to judge it under a strict standard of scrutiny, and when you judge under a strict standard of scrutiny, those laws usually fail, or a lower standard of scrutiny, something like a rational basis. Does the state have a legitimate reason for putting things forward? So, for example, a state that decides whether or not it's going to have absentee ballots available to everyone, that's a decision that's judged under something like a rational basis or a reasonableness standard. States have lots of discretion there. But if a state wanted to impose something like a literacy test for voting or a poll tax, something that would go to the core of the right to vote, that would be subject to much stricter scrutiny, much more likely to be struck down. And so I expect that when the plaintiffs appeal this case to the state Supreme Court, they're going to argue that the judge erred in the level of scrutiny. He should have applied strict scrutiny, and under strict scrutiny, the law should fail.
You have written about this law. You've been following about it, and you have some opinions yourself about it, basically quoting from what you wrote more recently, that it does put a burden on voters for no apparent good reason, because the problem of in-person voter fraud really doesn't exist.
Yeah, these laws have been passed in a number of states, and with the exception of Rhode Island, they've been passed on party-line votes, Republicans voting for them, Democrats voting against them. And it seems that the reason that Republicans, many Republicans, legislators support them is because they expect that these laws will lead to at least a modest decline in Democratic turnout, because those people who are least likely to have voter ID tend to be most likely to vote for Democrats, poor minorities, elderly voters. And so it looks like these laws have a partisan motivation, and also from my studies, I could not find any cases where impersonation voter fraud was a serious problem in an election. If we were really serious about combating voter fraud, the first thing we would do is get rid of absentee ballots. And one of the perverse results of this case, assuming that the judge's ruling stands, is that we're likely to see many more absentee ballots being cast in Pennsylvania. And if you want to find some history of voter fraud in Pennsylvania, look at what's happened with absentee ballots. So this ruling actually might increase the amount of election fraud in this election.
That's interesting. And the judge also seemed to be okay, if I can use not a particularly legal word, but the idea of a limited burden on voters seemed to stand constitutional muster.
Well, sure, because, you know, every rule that imposes something on voters is a somewhat of a burden. So the fact that we have many states where you have to register to vote in advance, you have to register 15 days or some period before the election, that imposes a burden on voters. The fact that we don't provide free transportation to voters to get to the polls, that can impose a burden on voters, so that we don't have early voting. And so he saw this voter ID requirement for most voters as simply a minor inconvenience, not a big deal. And for those voters for whom it is a big deal, he suggests there are alternative routes, either absentee ballots or seeking an exemption. He also noted that Pennsylvania, since it's passed its law, has eased the requirements for what it takes to get these new Pennsylvania IDs in terms of the birth certificate or other supporting documentation that needs to be produced in order to get the identification.
Was this a well-written opinion?
This was a very well-done opinion, and I would say that many of the opinions I've been reading from the judges have had more of a partisan cast to them. This is a judge who clearly struggled with these issues, who looks like he spent a lot of time looking at the evidence, judging the credibility. And so while I disagree with his opinion, I think it's well-crafted, and it's the kind of opinion that is likely to be upheld on an appeal. And I should say that's especially true because, if you remember, this was just an opinion based on whether or not the state should be preliminarily enjoined from enforcing its law. And when it comes to preliminary injunctions, courts are generally very deferential to what the trial court does because the trial court's there on the ground and has to make a decision in kind of under exigent circumstances.
And we should add that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has only six members, three Republicans and three Democrats.
That's right. And if there is a partisan deadlock, which is possible in this case, I don't follow your Supreme Court that closely, so I don't know how likely that is, but if there is a deadlock, then the lower court ruling will stand. So the tie goes to whatever the lower court decided, and so it is possible that it will come out that way. I would not be surprised, though, to see an affirmance. Not on a 3-3 basis.
And we have about 45 seconds. I'll just quickly read his summary. Petitioner's counsel did an excellent job of putting a face to those burdened by the ID requirement. At the end of the day, however, I do not have the luxury of deciding this issue based on my sympathy for the witnesses or my esteem for counsel. Is that a typical summary from a judge?
Well, this is a judge that went out of his way to be courteous. He also pointed out early in the opinion that last election he had sided against Republicans when they were bringing complaints against Acorn. So this is a judge that really, I think, tried to walk the line of non-ideological, non-partisan-type decision.
Well, Richard Hessen, thank you for joining us and getting our conversation started today on Radio Times.
It's been a pleasure.
And he's professor of law and political science at the University of California at Irvine, author of a book called The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. He also blogs at electionlawblog.org. We're going to carry on this conversation, talking about the judge's decision yesterday, refusing to grant an injunction that would have stopped Pennsylvania's controversial voter ID law. And Vito Volchek waiting in the wings. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
A stroke can rob us of our ability to speak, to move, to understand. The new Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital uses an interventional approach to the rapid treatment of stroke and aneurysm. Formed in collaboration with stroke experts from Jefferson's Faculty Practice Plan and the Jefferson Neuroscience Network, they use minimally invasive techniques to avoid open brain surgery, to prevent disabilities, and to save lives. The Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital supports WHYY.
I'm Jesse Thorne. When MTV News producer Ben Wagner turned 30, he went to Nantucket and met someone very special.
I was standing watching the sunset and from the edge of the dune heard, "Is the birthday boy here?" And turned and there he is.
It was Mr. Rogers. What did he talk about with the world's kindest man? Find out on Bullseye from PRI.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY.
Musicians in Iran face all kinds of restrictions on what they can play and even the kind of instruments they can use. So when the Iranian band Kiosk headed to the U.S., they found new inspiration.
I was still relating more and more to gypsy music, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that gypsies like us, they don't belong to anywhere anymore.
We talk with the lead singer of the group Kiosk next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking about yesterday's decision by Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court Judge Robert Simpson. He refused to grant an injunction that would have stopped Pennsylvania's voter ID law that was signed by Governor Corbett earlier this year. The challenge to the law came from a number of groups, including from the ACLU of Pennsylvania. Joining us now is Vital Volchak, and he is the ACLU's legal director, a job he's had since 2004, part of a team of lawyers who argued for the plaintiffs. And Vic, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Do we not have him? We should try to get him. And again, we are talking about yesterday's ruling from Judge Robert Simpson. And we have a trio of guests who have joined us, including Vic Volchak. And it sounds like I'm hearing you. Vic, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
Well, you're welcome. How are you feeling today?
Look, not great. What we're talking about here is the right to vote, which is not just any right. It's a foundational right. Because if you don't have right to vote, you don't have any other right.
You know, Vic... Vic, we're going to call you back only because it's an absolutely terrible phone line, and I do want to make sure that our listeners have a chance to hear what you have to say. We're going to call you back, and I'll give out that phone number again, and it's 1-888-477-9499. Again, 1-888-477-WHYY. We are talking about a decision or ruling yesterday by Pennsylvania Common Court Judge Robert Simpson, essentially upholding the state's new voter ID law. He wrote a 70-page opinion, the judge rejecting an argument by the plaintiffs that the new law would disenfranchise voters, and that challenge was brought by a number of organizations, including the ACLU, the NAACP, the League of Women Voters, and other advocacy groups. They say they will be appealing that ruling, and we hope to get Vic Volchak up and a better phone line. That phone number to call in with any questions or comments you might have is 1-888-477-9499. Vic, do we have you back?
I'm back.
Okay, much better, much, much better. Sound like you were underwater there. Your response to this ruling yesterday?
Yeah, we're talking about the right to vote, which is not just any constitutional right. It's foundational. If you don't have the right to vote, then all your other rights are in jeopardy. And the situation we have here is that the Commonwealth passes a law that jeopardizes that right for hundreds of thousands of people. They pass it in order to fight fraud, and then they admit that there's really no fraud to be fought, and this law is not necessary. And under those circumstances, we thought that if the court finds that there are people whose rights may be undermined, may be violated, that the benefit of the doubt would go to those individuals. But unfortunately, that's not what happened.
Knowing what and reading what the judge ruled, would you have argued the case differently?
We felt good about the case we put on. We looked at the Indiana case decided by the Supreme Court and looked at what they didn't do so very well, and we bolstered those aspects of the case. So we put on 14 individuals who could not get ID. We explained why they couldn't get the ID. We put on experts who talked about how even sometimes lawyers cannot get IDs for some of these people because it's so difficult and in some cases impossible. And then we put on irrefutable evidence that this is not just about 14 people, but you're literally talking about hundreds of thousands, as many as a million people. And even taking the state's own numbers, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. So I'm not sure what we would do differently in this case, because we thought we did what we needed to do to win.
The judge questioned some of those numbers, and he seemed to lean towards the lower numbers of people that might be burdened by this voter ID law.
He did, and the only sort of scientific evidence that was put on based on our expert. It was a poll done under scientific standards. It was very carefully, very meticulously done, and the judge brushed it away essentially by saying he didn't like the demeanor of our witness. Hmm. But even if you discount our sort of empirical evidence, which was solid, the state's own evidence is that there are about 750,000, and that does not include a number that the judge didn't mention, The state admitted during the trial there are another 570,000 beyond that 750,000 that they didn't count as not having ID. And those people definitely don't have ID. Those are people who had a PennDOT ID, but that has been expired more than 8 months. So there can't even be a doubt as to whether or not those folks have the ID or don't. They may be able to get it, but as of June, they hadn't. So, there certainly was an effort to try to show that the numbers are lower. But the judge, even with that, said there's over 100,000 people. How many people do you have to show are going to have a problem voting before a court is going to grant an injunction?
The judge seemed to indicate with some of the plaintiffs that appeared before the court or gave testimony before the court that they could vote absentee. Is that a fair response?
Well, you know, that was what some of the courts in other states said to allow these laws to stand. And what I think is significant is that Pennsylvania's law is much stricter. So, for instance, Georgia has a fairly tight voter ID requirement, but in that state they have what's known as no reason absentee balloting, which means anybody can vote absentee. And so the court said, yeah, the reason we're going to uphold the photo ID is that nobody's truly disenfranchised, because if you don't have ID you can just vote absentee. That's not the case in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania actually has fairly rigorous requirements. You can only vote absentee if you've got a medical excuse saying that you can't get to the polls, or you will certify that you're out of town on business. So if you're actually encouraging people to lie and say they're unavailable, to some extent you're encouraging some sort of fraud. But because absentee balloting is not available to anybody and everybody, that's not an avenue that's available to our plaintiffs.
On what grounds are you going to appeal this ruling?
Well, we're still working through it, as you can imagine. It's a 70-page decision. We're going to have one crack at it in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And it's much harder to get an appeals court to overturn decisions based on facts. So if the judge says, I didn't believe the expert, it's difficult, not impossible, but difficult to get an appeals court to disagree with that. So much of the argument is likely to be about legal issues, and the big one really is that the judge did not treat voting as a fundamental right. If voting was truly a fundamental right, then we should win this case, because the government would have to come forward not only and say, oh yeah, we should be able to get everybody an ID, but they would have to come forward with evidence showing that they needed to have this law, and that in fact they had a concrete plan to make sure that not a single person would be left without ID on election day, and they didn't come close to doing that.
So a limited burden is not appropriate?
The burden really should be on the state here. Once we've come forward and shown that we have individuals who are not going to be able to vote, the burden should be on the state to say not so. And just, you know, one illustration shows how difficult the court made this burden. We put two individuals in front of the court. One was a young man with autism who he and his mother testified that they tried to go to PennDOT, and because of all the stimulus and the lights and the noise and the people talking and the wait, the young man simply was not able to complete the process. He had to go home. He couldn't get the ID. We had another woman who's in her 90s, has voted in every election since 1940. She's in a nursing home. There's a polling place right next door. Two of the times during the year that she manages to leave is to go vote because it's so important for her, but she really can't go any place else. And she testified she could not get the PennDOT. For both of these individuals, the judge said, I don't believe they're not really going to be able to vote, but if they're not able to vote and their ballot's not counted, they can go to court. They can go to Common Pleas Court. Look, going to PennDOT is bad enough. Trying to go to court is another thing. And so, you know, if we have to show a complete impossibility of being able to vote, then that's just way too strong a burden when you're talking about something as fundamental as voting.
I do want to get to our callers, but just a quick follow-up there. But if you're in a nursing home in Pennsylvania, can't you get an ID from the nursing home itself?
Yes, in theory, because the state has simply said you don't even need to have it secure. If you've got an inkjet printer, you can just print print up an ID with a photo, a name, and an expiration date, and it'll be good enough. We're not aware of any nursing homes that are printing these IDs. The home this resident is in are not printing the IDs, and the judge actually, in his opinion, said that it's based on the testimony, there's no evidence that any of these homes are going to be printing these IDs. So, yes, while theoretically that may be an option under the law, in reality, it's not one that either this petitioner or many other seniors are going to be able to take advantage of.
Well, let me get some callers in on the conversation, talking with Witold Volchek, Vic Volchek. He is the ACLU of Pennsylvania's legal director. He's had that job since 2004 and part of a team of lawyers that argued a case before Pennsylvania Court Judge Robert Simpson, representing plaintiffs who were hoping to have the judge grant an injunction on Pennsylvania's voter ID law. Let me get, looks like Richard from Lower Gwinnett to join us. And Richard, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hello. I've been listening to several calls on this topic over the last several months, and I've really been rather insulted by the characterization of me as a member of two minorities, that I'm unwilling or unable or don't want to take the responsibility to get a voter ID. If you want people to get an ID, then get in your car and go for, like that autism one you just mentioned. Why can't someone go to his house and take a picture of him?
Well, and if you say, Richard, let me see what Vic Volchek has to say. Vic, go ahead.
Look, I appreciate the sentiment, and I think this the notion that everybody can or should be able to get a photo ID is widespread, and it's not a political one. I think it's a middle-class phenomenon. Look, about 90% of people have IDs. Most of the time, they are driver's licenses. In fact, the caller just said, why don't they get in the car? Most of the folks we have don't drive, have never driven, have never had a license. But what the evidence shows, when you look more carefully, there are an awful lot of people who don't drive. There are an awful lot of people on the order of 10 to 15% of the population who don't have the kind of photo ID that you need to vote. And that's an important point, because it's not just any photo ID. And if you could just take a photo in your house and then have somebody bring that to PennDOT and have them give you an ID, that would be great. But you can't do that. Under this law, it's a very limited number of IDs, photo IDs, that are acceptable. So, for instance, there's a lot of people, mostly minority, low income, low educated, live in the city, who may have something like, say, a veteran's ID. So they fought for their country and they have a photo ID. But that ID doesn't work because it doesn't have an expiration date. So the problem here is that the Commonwealth has so restricted the types of IDs that are allowed, that you've got somewhere, I mean, our estimates are 12 to 14% of the voting age population in Pennsylvania do not have an ID that's going to work at the polls on election day.
Richard, thanks for the call. Let's see what Rose from Flemington, New Jersey has to say. Rose, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm in New Jersey, and something has happened to me in the last, in the 08 and then the 12 primaries here in Jersey. Laws were changed here where in the previously disabled people were able to rely on the fact that a absentee ballot would be sent to them, and then the law was changed where we have to reapply. Now, as a blind person, I managed my mail very poorly and essentially was shut out of two elections based on this. I applaud Mr. Volchek's work to try to bring some sanity to this. It's a real pity to me that your voter ID card, you know, which we always got, has become inadequate. Perhaps the federal government should come down and do something on a nationwide basis to ensure that all voter registration cards have photos.
Well, Rose, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. It raises another issue. And let me, though, toss it to you, Vic, because I was thinking about this as well, and we probably should do a show about whether there needs to be some kind of a national ID card. Would that help to solve some of the problems that you've been dealing with?
Well, it would solve the voting problem, but it would raise all sorts of other issues related, I mean, mostly privacy issues related to having a national voter ID card. But let me just quickly say that the caller makes an important point, which is that any burden or obstacle to voting is going to prevent people from voting, is going to drive people away from voting, and it doesn't need to be something huge. It can be something little. So think about the poll taxes. I mean, those weren't $500. You could say, oh, you only have to pay $1 to vote. What's the big deal? Well, for some percentage of the population, it would be a big deal, and the result is that some people are not going to vote or not going to be able to vote. And in a country like ours, where it's hard enough to get a meaningful percentage of the population to come out and vote, why would you put up obstacles that are unnecessary? And that's exactly the situation we have with this voter ID card.
Vic, let me quote something else from the judge's opinion. He said, I also considered allegations of partisan motivation for Act 18 in general and the disturbing tendentious statements by House Majority Leader Mike Terzai to a Republican gathering in particular. Ultimately, though, I determined that this evidence did not invalidate the interest of supporting Act 18 for factual and legal reasons. I declined to infer that other members of the General Assembly shared the boastful views of Representative Terzai without proof that other members were present at the time the statements were made. I'd be curious about your response to that part of the ruling.
Look, we think there was plenty of evidence for the judge to find that there was a partisan bias to this law. But the important thing is, under the law, we don't need to show that this was, in fact, intended to suppress the vote. And some of us think that's what was really going on here. But under the law, we don't need to show that. It's enough to show that this law is unnecessary and that, in fact, it creates a substantial burden or obstacle for hundreds of thousands of people to be able to vote. Under the law, if we're talking about a constitutional right, that should be plenty.
About a minute before we have to say goodbye, and as you said, you're considering your next move, which is to take your case to the state Supreme Court?
Yes, we are definitely going to file an appeal that's likely to be filed today. We will ask the court to deal with it quickly. Let me just raise something very quickly.
Okay.
You might ask your next guest. Part of the judge's opinion says that there's this new ID that's coming on board and anybody can get it, and so the petitioners will be able to get it. First of all, that ID is not out. I dare you to find anything on the Department of State website that talks about how this ID really works. And what we learned in court is that not everybody can get it immediately, that first you have to try to get a secure ID, and you get sent home to try, and only if you can certify that you've tried and you can't get it do you qualify for that ID. So this is not a no-hassle, easy process where somebody can just walk in and get this new ID if it ever comes into effect.
Well, on that note, Vic Volchek, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you for having me, Marty.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Legal director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania, and again, part of the team of lawyers who argued this case before the Commonwealth Court Judge Robert Simpson. He refused to grant an injunction that would have stopped Pennsylvania's voter ID law. We do have a third guest waiting in the wings, and we'll take some more calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Announcing the 2012 WHYY Connections Festival, September 6th through 9th. 4 days of free arts and culture events, including an outdoor concert featuring Yola Tango, Frank Turner, Maps and Atlases, and more, Saturday, September 8th. And on September 9th, performances by Fred Paris and the Five Satins, Charlie Gracie, and more at the Philadelphia Doo-Wop Festival. More artists and events to come. Visit whyy.org/connectionsfestival.
I'm sorry, Frank, but I can't agree to let you risk another burglary.
Look, the library was strictly a smash-and-grab job.
On the next Fresh Air, actor Frank Langella. He's starring in the new futuristic film Robot and Frank, about a retired burglar with dementia whose caregiver is a robot. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Pennsylvania's voter ID law stands for now. And in Ohio, the Obama campaign challenges restrictions on early voting. Also, Public Radio's Kurt Anderson says he never found a true fictional account of what it's like to live with diabetes, so he worked it into his new novel. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and our third guest in this hour of Radio Times is Ronald Ruman. He's press secretary for the Pennsylvania Department of State, an office led by Secretary of State Carol Achel, and the office is responsible for elections oversight and implementation in the state of Pennsylvania. And Ron Ruman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here, Marty. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Ron, let's say I'm an older Pennsylvanian. I don't have a birth certificate. I don't have a passport. I don't have a car, and I live in one of the counties in the state without a PennDOT office. How do I get a approved voter ID?
Well, there are a number of options, most of which will require you to get to a PennDOT driver license center. And one of the questions that's come up is, how do folks do this? Well, one of the questions we've said is, there are many people who need to get rides to the polls every year, and someone provides them. So we are encouraging church groups, political groups, senior citizen groups, and others who help get people to the polls to also offer to get them to PennDOT to get an ID. And that certainly is the best way to do it. However, as go back in what your previous guest said, in fact, senior care facilities can provide IDs, and the person you mentioned could get an ID from her facility. I imagine if she asked them, they would probably do that. I wouldn't see why they wouldn't. So that's another option. And, of course, absentee ballot is an option. And if an individual indicates that they are physically, it is difficult for them to get to a polling place on election day, as far as we know, our county election boards will grant them an absentee ballot. I don't agree that it is that's difficult to get that here in Pennsylvania. We think our election folks are reasonable. They understand that sometimes there are physical challenges that make it difficult for people to get out to vote, and they will allow them to use an absentee ballot. So there are a number of different options.
By the state's own accounting, something like 758,000 people in Pennsylvania lack the proper documents that came out earlier this year. And as Vic Volta, hold on,
well,
one second.
Let me correct that right here, because that is wrong, and that is wrong, and that is wrong. And opponents of this measure have been using that number to misinform citizens and to scare them into thinking they're not going to be able to vote. Frankly, I think that's an awful thing to do. What that number was, Marty, is we, in order to reach out early to folks who might not have a PennDOT ID, matched the voter registration database with the PennDOT ID database. That's the best we could do. Those are two separate databases set up for different reasons. Unfortunately, they don't match exactly. If your name did not match precisely between those two, if perchance you had your name is William on one, Bill on the other, you had a middle initial on one, not on the other, it showed up as not a match. As many folks have found as they've canvassed people on that list, many people on that list do have, in fact, have PennDOT IDs. So the number is way lower than that. And it also does not take into account other IDs that people may have, military IDs, student IDs with expiration dates. They do have to have expiration dates. But I would mention, in the last couple months since the law passed, many major universities across the state that did not have dates have agreed to put them on or put stickers on, which are allowed to let their students who may not have another ID, if they're from out of state, for instance, vote. It includes Penn State, includes Temple, includes the state system of higher education. Penn already was in there. Drexel was already qualified. So there are many other IDs that folks could use already to vote. So those numbers that the opponents are throwing around here are simply inaccurate, and they know that.
But those numbers came from the state. They didn't come from the opponents.
But we never said these are people that don't have any ID. We said precisely what they are. There's not an exact match between PennDOT and our voter registration. So we wanted to get letters out to people if they fell into that category to alert them early. that has been reported accurately in many places and inaccurately in many others, and been used as a frenzy by opponents to scare people into thinking they couldn't vote.
Well, let me, and something that the Philadelphia Inquirer did, looking at some of the state computers, and they had, and I'm quoting here to Pierce, the state's computers had problems distinguishing names containing spaces, names with hyphens, and
well, they don't have trouble distinguishing them. Again, that's a problem. The two databases do not match exactly, and that is correct. PennDOT's computer system functions differently than ours. So if there was a space between a MC like McHugh, MCHUGH in one and not the other, it showed up as a not a match. If you had a hyphen in one and not the other, it showed up as not a match. Mm. We couldn't parse those out to mail letters to some folks and not others. So we erred on the side of caution and sent letters to we knew a number of folks that were going to have IDs, but we would rather send a letter to someone that has an ID than miss someone who doesn't. So, you know, that's how that happens.
Let me ask you also to respond to something that Vic Volchek said that in the court hearing that the state essentially said that there are an additional 50,000 or 500,000 people who might not have the proper ID.
Well, you know, no one knows exactly what the number is, but our belief is, and we firmly believe, that anyone who wants an ID to vote, any legally registered voter in Pennsylvania, can get an ID, particularly with the new Department of State ID card, which will be available August 27th at any of those PennDOT driver license centers. And again, to correct an inaccuracy that the previous guest mentioned, it is, in fact, a one-stop shop. What you will do is go in, and if you cannot get the documents you need to get a PennDOT ID, you will sign an affirmation to that effect while you're at PennDOT. They will ask you, they will ask you, you know, for the documents you might need, which may include a birth certificate. And we set this up particularly because we did discover as we implemented the law that there were some small number of folks born in other states and other countries that just couldn't get the birth certificates they needed to get these IDs. So this will allow them to sign an affirmation that says, you know, I called Wyoming where I was born 80 years ago, I can't get it, or I know I can't get it, I tried in the past. They don't have to go home and come back. They'll sign the affirmation while they're there, present a Social Security number, don't need the card, a number, and two proofs of residence. Their voter registration will be verified, because you do need to be a registered voter to get this card. It is only for voting purposes, and it will say that very clearly. They'll take your picture, and you'll go home with that card. So we believe with the institution of this card, anyone who wants to get an ID, any legally registered voter, will be able to do so.
Let me get some callers in on the conversation. We have Peggy from Mount Airy. And, Peggy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks.
You're welcome.
My question is, I've looked at other states who required IDs, and they've taken at least a year or 2 years to roll out the program, and I'm sure there must be research on how much time it takes to educate a large population like the millions of people in Pennsylvania, and why do you think you can reach everyone in just a small number of months?
It's a fair question. Now, Peggy, Ron, go ahead.
Well, of course, the legislature passed the law in March, and they set the effective date, so that's not anything we can do anything about. That's what's in the law, but we believe that we will be able to let everyone know about it. We think most folks already know about it through the extensive publicity that has surrounded it. We have, from the Department of State and from our community outreach firm that we've hired to help us, have attended dozens of events across the state, including several in Philadelphia. We'll have scores, if not hundreds more, between now and November. We have a website that's votespa.com for folks. There's a toll-free number, 1-877-VOTES-PA. We're on Facebook and Twitter now for information there. And beginning in a few weeks, we'll have an extensive paid media campaign of radio, television, and print media that will get the word out across the state, and particularly targeted to urban areas, African Americans, Spanish-speaking folks, to try and get the word to them, folks in the cities who you may need that. We're going to have some transit advertising to get the word out. So we hope to make sure everyone does know about it.
Peggy, thanks for the call. Let's see what Nick from Fishtown has to say. Nick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there. You're welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Nick.
Oh, okay. So my comment was just about the hypocrisy of these Republican lawmakers who were swept into office on promises of fiscal conservatism and anti-burdensome regulation stances. And here this law comes that's expensive to implement and is essentially a burdensome regulation on anybody who wants to vote.
Ron Ruman?
Our belief is that this law will preserve the integrity of each vote by doing all we can to verify the identity of each voter as they come to the polls, which we really can't do now, and to make sure every vote counts as it should. And we agree with the judge who said it is not an undue burden. It's a burden that's placed equally on everyone. We think anyone who wants an ID can get one to vote, and that's the law.
Ron, I've asked you this before, but it's the issue that hangs over a conversation like this, which has to do with in-person voter impersonation. All the studies that have looked not just at Pennsylvania but across the country finding it barely exists as a problem.
Well, the problem with those studies is here in Pennsylvania and elsewhere is it's virtually impossible to detect right now. We have no means to detect it, and that is what we think this law will help us do. So to say, well, you don't have all this long record of prosecutions, no, because you can't detect it. And to also, go back a little bit to what the previous guest indicated, there are some changes in our absentee ballot requirements as well. And yes, absentee ballot fraud has been a problem in Pennsylvania, but once you get people registered to vote fraudulently, and you can do that through the absentee process, then they're registered and they can show up and can get anyone to show up and be that person. With a photo ID, it's going to be much more difficult. So, and if you want to look at it as a preventive measure, that's kind of how we see it. And, I guess I wonder why the opponents of this law don't want to do all they can to make sure this doesn't happen.
But interestingly, the state in its argument before the judge did not offer any evidence of voter impersonation fraud.
Well, again, as I said, it is virtually impossible to detect that now. I kind of liken it to how did we, before we had radar for the police, was no one on the highway speeding, or could we just not detect it? I think we know the answer to that one.
Yeah, but there are lawyers who can find tax fraud. I mean, there are ways of rooting out fraud.
Marty, that's the problem. You tell me you show up, you sign your name, you're going to sign your name exactly the way you did today 20 years ago when it's on that poll book.
Right.
I mean, that's all we have. That's not a reliable means to say who you are. And I think it was interesting that the election director from Allegheny County, who testified in this court case, said that a few years ago, because of his signature not matching, he was actually challenged when he went to vote. And how did he resolve that challenge? Well, golly, he pulled out a photo ID. So, I mean, I kind of proved our point.
Well, but do you honestly believe that there are people in Pennsylvania, individual people that are going to multiple polls or going several times to a polling place and voting fraudulently?
Well, Marty, I'm a lifelong Pennsylvanian, and I love my state very dearly.
Me too.
But unfortunately, we have seen the lengths to which people have gone to swing elections in this state. And if people, would fraudulently register and vote thousands of absentee ballots as they did less than 20 years ago in the Mark Stinson Center election in Philadelphia, if we have two previous speakers of the House now sitting in jail because they did things illegally to win elections, I believe very firmly that it certainly could happen that folks would organize this to get folks to vote fraudulently, to vote as other folks because we don't have a way to check. So, I mean, I wish I would say no. I wish I could say I wouldn't believe that kind of thing would happen, but unfortunately our history in Pennsylvania tells us otherwise.
Well, but you're referring to registration fraud, but you're not really referring to in-person voter impersonation.
Well, but, who would have thought the other would have happened? I mean, you're asking me, do I believe it could happen? Yeah, I believe it could happen, sure. There are bad people out there.
Well, indeed, but it seems to me that has to be obviously, the judge didn't buy this argument, but it's important to try to prove if fraud exists at this level, we should know about it, and we should take steps to do about it, but it looks like it doesn't exist so far as all the studies have found.
Well, I think what the studies have shown, there hasn't been proof of prosecution and conviction, which I, again, go back to the fact that you can't detect it. But and I don't want to waste a lot of time talking about that. Our mission is to let folks know if you're going to vote this November, unless the Supreme Court says otherwise, you're going to need a photo ID. So please make sure you have one that works. And if you don't, go to our website or call that toll-free number and find out how to get one if you need one.
Let me get Adrienne from Wynwood to join our conversation. Adrienne, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I am a poll worker, and I believe that I am under penalty of $10,000 fine and a year in jail if I don't uphold the law. Now, if I check somebody's ID, where do I draw the line in substantially the same as the voter rolls?
It's a good question, Adrian. Ron Ruman, go ahead.
We're going to be meeting with all the election directors next week in State College at their statewide annual meeting, and we'll be talking about this, among other things. And we will offer some examples of what we think they should accept as substantially conforming. And essentially, look, we're going to say use common sense. If it's a Bob and a Robert or a Bill and a William, or it's a middle initial not there, or someone who says, hey, I recently got married and I have a hyphenated last name, or they, you know, say I recently got married and I changed the last name, the photo matches, the address matches, but you know, use your common sense, that's the same person. If you have a question, you can ask your judge of election. But you know, we believe that the substantially conforming will, you know, nicknames would be good. Don't worry about a middle initial if it's missing in one or the other. Essentially, use your good common sense and make that decision.
That sounds like a fair amount of discretion on the part of a poll worker.
Well, there's a discretion right now. As I pointed out, the Allegheny County election director was challenged a couple of years ago because the poll worker didn't think his signature matched. I mean, that exists now, and it really isn't going to change all that much, except you're going to be looking at a photo ID as and a name to put together as well. So that discretion's already there.
Where's Secretary? I'm happy to talk with you, Ron, but where's Secretary Achill?
She's traveling right now. She's out of state today.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And that's Ronald Ruman, and he is press secretary for the Pennsylvania Department of State, headed up by Secretary Carol Achill, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out more about this program. There's probably a lively Facebook conversation taking place as we speak. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.